Hey everybody, welcome to the Good Evening Kitties podcast, a Tales from the Crypt review. My name is Melissa, your ghostess with the mostest, and today's episode is Season 2, Episode 15, Mute. Oh, I'm sorry, I went a little mute there. It is Season 2, Episode 15, Mute Witness to Murder. Get it? Okay. This episode was pretty fun. This is gonna be a good one. Let me go ahead and read. Let's see, I'm gonna read the description first, I think, today. For Mute Witness to Murder, the description on the box is, Cry Murder. A woman sees a doctor kill his wife, loses her voice, and is put in a mental ward by the doc. That pretty much sums it up. But it's more than that. And we'll get into that. This episode was originally aired July 10th, 1990. It stars Richard Thomas, who you might know from TV's The Waltons, and he also had a role in the TV show, the series It. It also stars Patricia Clarkson from The Green Mile and Easy A, and Reed Birney from TV's House of Cards. The screenplay was by Nancy Doyne, and it's directed by Jim Simpson, who also assistant directed to the movie Event Horizon. As always, John Cassier does the voice of the Crypt Keeper, and Danny Elfman does the theme song. So let's go ahead and get into this one here. Now, in this episode, it starts out, the Crypt Keeper is in a doctor outfit. Like, he's got the little reflector on the top of his head, and he's in scrubs, and there's, like, a little black cat sitting there, and, like, a little skull, and, you know, he's just sitting there, and he ends up doing the line. There's a line in the end song for this podcast where he goes, I just had quite a scare. I actually thought my heart was beating again. And it comes from this episode. So he says this in the intro here that I have in the clip that I have in the exit song for this podcast. So I thought that was, you know, that was interesting. I kind of forgotten which one it came from. And so I was like, oh, okay. When I saw that. So that's where it's from. So he's basically just bringing in the episode here. And this one starts out, there's like a really, you know, there's a party going on. Richard Thomas and Patricia Clarkson's characters, she plays Susie Hastings, and he plays Paul Hastings. And Paul and Susie are having, like, a party at their house. It looks like it's a costume party. Maybe it's Halloween, or maybe they're just having fun. It could be New Year's. I don't know. And they're together, and they're kind of, you know, they're really in love. And Patricia Clarkson's talking about, like, kind of this love story of how they met or things like that. And it's a little cheesy.
There we were. Two perfect strangers, completely and totally unknown to each other, who happened to be standing in the same exact street corner at the same exact moment in time. I mean, if I'd stopped to look in the store window, if Paul's elevator had been 1 minute faster or slower, we never would have met.
And I think some of her friends were like, okay, you know, like they probably heard it many times before. And, you know, just kind of setting up, like, how close this couple is and things like that. And so, you know, the husband, Paul, comes out and, you know, like, they're kind of hugging on each other. And then so the couple's like, okay, well, we're going to get going. So the party clears out and Patricia Clarkson, who is dressed as, I guess, kind of a sexy nurse. Or no, she's a sexy kitty. Never mind. She's sexy kitty. It was hard to tell because she's just in, like, a white outfit with a white skirt. If it wasn't for the little fuzzy cat ears, it would have looked like a nurse's hat. But no, I think she's like a sexy kitty, I guess. And, you know, so she's standing on the balcony, and she's super young in this. And so I like Patricia Clarkson, so it was kind of fun to see this and stuff. And so Paul Hastings, who is played by Reed Birney, who is the husband, you know, he's out there and they're on the, there's like a balcony outside of their apartment. And he's like, you know, I got you something. I'm assuming I think it's their anniversary or something, like some sort of party. So he got her something. His costume, I don't think he's really in costume. He looks like he's just wearing like a suit, but maybe he's supposed to be something. And so he's like, you know, I hid this gift so you wouldn't find it. And so he takes off to go look for the gift, and she's out on the balcony, just kind of like happy and excited about whatever this gift's gonna be and things like that. She's having a great time. And while she's out there, she starts hearing this, you know, there's across, it's, they're pretty close balconies, really. Like, if you got on the one side of the balcony and jumped to the next one, because they're like concrete, they're not like, they're like more like patios. And you could definitely jump from one to the other. I mean, it would still be scary because you're still over a road, but they're fairly close. And so she looks over and the lights are coming on and there's a couple that's fighting. And, you know, it's a woman and a man, and they're fighting about, they had to leave a party early and it was really important to the woman, and she's all mad. And the husband's like holding his head and stressed out about it. You know, she wanted to stay at the party and they're just fighting. And She's on one end of the wind, like there's a set of windows, and the wife in the other apartment is on one side, and then the other guy is on the left, who's played by Richard Thomas, who we'll learn about later. And what I thought was interesting, he turns the lights completely off, and she's just like, "Don't turn that light off. We gotta talk," you know. And so he turns the light back on, she turns the lamp on. My bad. She turns the lamp on, and he immediately is just like, he becomes very resourceful. So as soon as she turns that light on, he just runs over, grabs that lamp and just beats her with it, you know, and she's screaming. And then he walks over to like the blinds on the, or like the drapes and the blinds on the window. And he just rips the cord off of that and then runs back over to like choke her out with it. Right before he chokes her out, you know, she's still talking. The woman is, and she's like, "I'm going to sue you. I can't believe you did this to me." And that's why he's like, "I'm just going to take you out," you know, because she's already bleeding fairly bad from the lamp thing. So he, like I said, he chokes her out up against the window. I mean, Patricia Clarkson's getting a great view. She can see all of it. And she's just like, you know, mute witness to murder after seeing this. And she's watching it. And the husband sets his wife down after he killed her. And then he just shuts the lights all off again. And immediately Patricia Clarkson's grabbing her throat like, "Oh my gosh," like it literally makes her go mute. So she's over there like, "What did I just see?" It all took in a matter of just like 5 minutes, you know, and so she's really just like, "What happened?" And that's when her husband comes back like, "Hey, I got you this gift," and the bag says Tiffany & Company, so he got something from Tiffany's for her, some sort of jewelry. And she turns around and she just has this look of terror on her face, and he's just like, "Oh my gosh, what?" Like, he's immediately like, "What happened? You know, are you okay?" And she can't speak. She's mute, and she just keeps going, "Ah, ah, ah," you know, she just can't do it. Yeah, it looks like it might be an anniversary party. I see like a banner hanging up. I guess it was a costume party too. I don't know. And so what I found was weird, like, so she's freaking out and he can't get her to talk and he's really worried, the husband is, Paul. And so he's sitting her down on the chair, and instead of like taking it to her hospital, he's like, I'll get a doctor and I'll be back. And I'm like, okay, this is like supposed to be the 90s or something, right? Like, it's probably like one in the morning and you're gonna run outside and just go find, like, hail down a doctor. Why aren't you taking her to the hospital? I don't see why. I'm like, come on, you know, if you're that worried, call an ambulance or something. She's seen something. And so he just runs out the door and leaves her there, and she's sitting there in disbelief, just like, what happened? You know, she can't talk, she's freaked out. Shortly after, Paul returns and he's like, "I brought a doctor." And I'm like, how did he find a doctor? And then there is Richard Thomas's character, who he plays Dr. Trask. And it's the exact same guy she just saw murder his wife. Isn't that convenient? That coincidentally, he runs into the murder doctor. And, you know, and at first, like, I thought, like, maybe he knew that she saw, and so he ran outside the house to go kind of take care of her and then ran into the husband. But I don't think that's how it went down, because he gets the doctor over there, and she at first is sitting there like beside herself, and she looks up and sees him, and she starts panicking in her eyes because she's like, "Oh my gosh, that's him." And her husband's like, "Honey, you know Dr. Trask, he lives across the courtyard, you know, from us." And Richard Thomas's character, Dr. Trask, he just looks high. He just is standing there just like, eh, you know, his eyes are like looking really creepy, and he's tired. And you know, I mean, he did just kill his wife, so he's probably tired. And he comes over to kind of check out her eyes, and you know, he's asking questions about what's been going on. And there's a funny scene where, like, they're talking about, like, what happened. He's like, you know, what was doing it? And he's like, "Well, where did this happen?" And Paul's like, "Oh, she was out there looking out on the balcony. When I came back, she was mute."
"Where did you say she was standing exactly when you found her in this state?"
"Out there, looking out on the balcony."
And then he kind of walks away, and there's this great scene where Dr. Trask just looks at her with these like vampire kind of eyes, and he kind of puts two and two together, like, oh, she saw. He heads out to the balcony and can see that he can see directly into his windows. And so he's immediately like, oh my gosh, she saw it all. So he wasn't, it just happened so far that I guess maybe Paul just ran next door because he knew Dr. Trask was there and knocked on the door. So technically she could have, had they just gone to the hospital, she probably could have got away with all this. So he immediately starts like preparing a way to get her out of there. And he's immediately like, "Your wife is very ill. I'm going to take her to my clinic." And he runs, I guess it's like an insane asylum or something. It seems like it's like a mental hospital. And they're like, "Okay, well, I'm going to take her with me, and we may need to sedate her so I can get her out of here." And that's when Patricia Clarkson, her character is like, I am not doing that. And so she goes around the side with like a golf club. And I think she meant to hit Dr. Trask, and she ends up hitting her husband, and he kind of like falls down, and they're like, hold your wife, I need to give her something. Because then that makes her look more crazy, but really she just can't tell them what's happening. And so Dr. Trask, like they lay her on the ground, and Dr. Trask pulls out this huge needle. Huge. Oh my gosh, so many big needles in this episode. The syringe is huge, but it's not even that the needle itself is like thick, it's just really long. And I'm like, what? Why is that gotta be that long? And he's like, I'm just giving her a mild sedative. And he jams it straight into her calf. And it had to have gone like straight into the bone or like through her leg. Like her calf's not that big. And I was like, geez, all right. That had to really hurt. Like they could have done that a little better, I think. But he's mad because she knows about the murder. And so Dr. Trask is like, you know, we'll take her to, he has a place called Long Hill. And he's like, we'll take her to Long Hill. We'll run some tests, see why this all happened. She ends up passing out from the sedative. She wakes up and she's strapped onto a gurney that's being wheeled down the hallway. And her husband is like, honey, it's going to be okay. We're going to help you. And she's wrapped up in a straitjacket. And they take her into this room. And these, it's like your standard portrayal of a mental hospital. Like it's a padded room. It's just like the floors and all of it's padded. I always thought they looked a little fun. Like you could bounce up on all the walls. I don't think they're super bouncy, but like everything's padded. And what's weird is these doors are like high-tech, like space-age doors. Like instead of just opening up, they slide up like it's like on a spaceship. They're just like, and slide up and slide down. And I'm like, that doesn't seem right. Like they should have it to where like you can like bolt it shut because these are mental people being held in there. But I don't know. It's just really, it was really space-agey, which I thought was kind of weird that they would put that much money into these doors. It's like, why aren't they just doors, but with like bolts. And so Paul is really, what I like about him is he's really, really worried. You know, he's like, what's happening? You know, she's never been like this before. Something's wrong. But he's putting trust into this doctor for some reason because they're neighbors. And Dr. Trask is like, well, you know, she's tired. Give it time. She could be in this state for a few days. It could be a few years. And so Paul goes home to get some rest. And Dr. Trask, he's a very neurotic type of character. And the thing is, he apparently has a heart condition.
A heart condition. Too much excitement, too much noise, too much talking. Aggravates it terribly.
And it seems pretty intense. Like he says it's exacerbated by noise and stress, which I think is what happened with his wife. It seems like they were at a party that maybe got too out of hand or like people were getting too crazy and loud and it was making his condition uncomfortable. So he's constantly like grabbing at his chest and acting like he can't breathe and taking so many pills all the time. I'm assuming it's nitroglycerin or something, but he just keeps popping all these pills like every 2 seconds because of his condition. And I'm like, I think you maybe not be a doctor, but if it's this bad. Susie is on the wall, like strapped up in her straitjacket. Plus she's got like a belt thing around her. Like she's really tied up. And so Dr. Trask is in there hanging out with her and there's like a camera and stuff watching the room and things like that. So it's like really monitored. And he's basically like, I could attempt to, you know, saying, I know you saw what I did and I could tell you why, but he's like, I'll just skip that. And he explains to her that she's in a sanatorium. Basically, I think he's not going to let, is what he's saying is he's not going to let her leave. And so, like I said, she's strapped down onto the ground and like they have these, I don't know, these like these hooks or something onto the ground. And so he wants to make sure she's very sedated and he's just trying to figure out, I think he's keeping her sedated so he can just figure out what he's going to do next. If she's going to speak, what is he going to have to do to protect himself? And there's this nurse in this episode, like she almost seems just as evil as he is, almost a little bit. Like everyone's got to know some stuff's going down at this place. Like it doesn't seem super helpful. Like it definitely seems like he's doing experiments or something on the people here. You don't see anyone else, like, patient-wise, but, I mean, it's not super, I don't know. You know, it seems kind of weird. And so he says that he wants to get her medication for Mrs. Hastings. And again, they have her, like, tied to this floor with, like, a seatbelt, which is kind of, yeah, I think they're just sitting, they may have used for, like, the production, like, just an old seat from, like, a car, and then, like, used the seatbelt to look like straps that they were strapping her down. It's kind of cool looking. This time instead of her calf they're up in her thigh, and again this needle is huge. Ah, you know, and they just like wipe it with some alcohol and they like throw it like a dart. She screams and I'm like, geez, Then a couple days later, so he's explaining to, Dr. Trask is explaining to Paul about all the stuff that's going on with his wife, the way that she's mute, that something scared her, you know, things are, stuff is bad, you know, they don't know when she'll be better. And Paul's there, it's cute, he's there with some flowers, you know, and he wants to see her and stuff. And at this point, I think she's been there for like a couple days, maybe. Maybe it's the next day. And that same nurse is feeding her, like spoon feeding her, but it's like pureed carrots. That's what she gets for lunch, just pureed carrots like a baby, but all right. Yeah, she got some evil eyes there. Yeah, that nurse is just kind of creepy. So Paul's back at home, and his sister's over. And I thought this was interesting, too, because his sister is like, yeah, his older sister's like, this is bullcrap.
In 13 years of working at a medical research laboratory, never heard of anyone who went from sane to insane in the space of 5 minutes. That just does not happen.
Dolores, you should see her. She can't talk. She doesn't know where she is or who I am. She came at me with a golf club.
Well, what do you know about this doctor anyway?
Oh, Jesus,
Dolores. Hey, a word to the wise from your big sister. Check him out. That's all I'm saying. If it were me, I'd leave no stone unturned. I'd make damn sure Susie was in the right hands.
She's like, what is happening? Because he's so worried about her. Because even though she's mute, what Dr. Trask is trying to say is that she went crazy and that she needs to be in this facility for her own safety. And it's like, she's not crazy, she's just mute. And so then Paul goes back a little later. He goes in to talk to Dr. Trask. And Dr. Trask, I think, is trying to kind of close the deal and make it look like Susie's getting real ill and that, you know, if she were to die, like maybe, you know, it was just an accident or part of her condition. So he's showing him all these like videotapes and pictures and things, and she's just walking around like aimlessly in the padded room in her straitjacket, just gone. And it's probably sedatives, really. I mean, she's probably been so sedated in this whole freaking episode why she's been there, you know. And Paul is like, oh my gosh, you know, what is wrong with her? She's so sick looking and gone. And Dr. Trask is like, she's not getting any better. And is there anything else you can tell me? Was there anything with your wife that drove you crazy? And he's like, what are you talking about? We're happy. Paul starts to yell, and Dr. Trask is just like, he immediately shuts that down. He can't handle any stress, which I don't know why you're a doctor. As soon as they start to raise their voice, he's like, oh God, you know. So he's explaining that Susie's psyche is really sensitive and that she had one slight turn that like just messed it up, and that's why she's crazy now. And Paul is like, I don't believe you. So then the doctor's like, well, Mr. Hastings will be leaving now, you know, and like calling front desk and to have him escorted out. And I think he may have signed over. I don't know why you would sign a guardianship over anyway. If he did, that's stupid. And so basically Dr. Trask is saying to the nurse that Mr. Hastings is becoming like a problem. He's extremely disadvantaged, like arrested development, paranoid fantasies, saying that he has psychosexual malfunctions. And I'm like, what would that even, to what? And that now that Dr. Trask will be monitoring the visits with him and her personally, and the nurse is like, okay. And then, so he's basically just setting things up so that eventually, I'm thinking, you know, something will happen to Susie, and then it will just be like, well, she was sick. And so now it's been like a little bit of time later, and Paul's there, and he's really upset. He wants to see his wife, you know, he's getting angry, and the nurses and stuff are having to come grab at him, and Dr. Trask is like, okay, well, you can watch her on the TV. And he's like, no, I want to see her in person. Show me my wife, I'm not watching her on TV. So he takes her to the room, and she's strapped down. Like I said, these doors on these rooms, like, go up and down so fast. Like, you just be like, boom, slammed down into it. Like, and it's all monitored and stuff. And Susie is, like, on a gurney on the floor there, strapped down in a little blanket. And Paul runs over to her, you know, and he's telling her, he's trying to figure out what happened. He was getting the bracelet, which I guess was the gift from Tiffany's. She still can't talk. And the thing that bugs me about this is, give her a pen and paper. Let her write it down. She's not broken. Like, why can't she, you know, why didn't, even at the house when she was scared, she could have ran over, started writing down something on a piece of paper. No, I mean, I could see why the doctor wouldn't give her any, but come on, like, she can write, I think, right? She just can't talk. So I'm just like, write it down, girl. You know, so the husband's trying to figure it out. He's saying all these different things that it could be or things, you know, and eventually he starts to figure out she saw something outside, and she's shaking her head like, yes, I did. And they're starting to figure it, you know, he's like, what did you see? And, you know, starting to figure it out. And during this, Dr. Trask is watching on the video camera or the video screen there, and he's like loading up a whole nother huge syringe, like he's getting ready to take these people out. And Richard Thomas is doing a good job with like having this faraway stare where he's like looking past you or like he's just crazy. And so he's loading up this syringe again, and he's like, okay, I gotta hurry up, gotta get in there. You know, and she's starting to kind of with her eyes tell him that it could, you know, it's Dr. Trask. And luckily it's good because like they seem very in sync as a couple. Like he knows this is not my wife, something's wrong. And as soon as he figures out it's Dr. Trask, the lights go off in the padded room, and it, like out of the side, Dr. Trask comes out and he's got this that huge syringe with the huge needle, and he jams it into Paul's neck, like down in his neck. And I'm like, oh my gosh, down in there. Like it's that's definitely poking something like into your throat. I don't know, that's such a long needle. And hits him with this high dose of whatever he grabbed. Ugh, Paul's got the needle in his neck and he pulls it out and it's like all red and stuff.
Congratulations, Mr. Hastings. You'd be very good at charades if you weren't about to die.
And what's weird is like, it's on like a camera thing. Maybe it's not all the time where you have to like buzz in to see the screen, but he just did what he did. And then he's talking to the screen, to the nurse and stuff. And he's like, I've sent Mr. Hastings home. You can bolt the gates. Like, I guess they're leaving for the day. And it's like, no, I mean, like, wouldn't you have been able to see on the screen, like, what he just did? Like, something's weird with this camera system or something. And so Paul gets up, and he's still, like, trying not to fall asleep or get sedated with this. And he's trying to fight him, and he ends up just falling down onto the floor there. And the stress is just, like, freaking Dr. Trask out, and he's taking more pills and looking all sweaty. And he walks, and Dr. Trask walks over to Paul right in front of Susie, which is, it's sad, because she can't do anything about it. She's strapped down, she can't talk. And he steps on Paul's neck and then just, like, crushes him out, like, crushes his trachea, I guess, and just chokes him out. And so Paul's dead. So it's sad, you know. You're like, oh, man, you're hoping that you're going to get out of here. And so he starts loading up another syringe to sedate her, I guess, and get rid of the body. And so now it's been, like, I guess, like, maybe a few days later again. And there's, like, this, they have her... I don't know if this is hooked onto a room because the walls are padded, but there's this like metal door and the nurse is there bathing her. The nurse is also seeming like she's a little afraid of Dr. Trask. So I think people know something's weird, you know, but they're just like, all right. And he comes up and he's like, I'll take care of this. You know, he grabs the towel to like get her out of the, it's like a shower closet. I don't know. They literally have like a hose that I guess they just, it's like a metal closet that they just like hose you down in there. That's uncomfortable. Just like they just put the people in there, hose them down. He's basically drying her off and saying to her, you know, like, this has become so stressful for me and I think I'm gonna give you a lobotomy. But then what he's gonna do is she won't survive the surgery. He'll say like he tried to do this procedure to help her, but then she didn't make it. But it's like, but I think I don't know, maybe Paul did sign some stuff over, because I feel like he'd have to ask, but I don't, maybe not. And so, you know, he's saying that and he's kind of letting her know that's what's gonna happen. And so she's really upset, and she's, like, wrapped up in a towel, and she's crying, and she's up on the in the corner, just, like, you know, her husband's dead, and she's in this situation, and she's crying, and then that's when she says the word Paul, and it's, like, really faint, like, it's just, like, you know, like, Paul, you know, like, really faint. She kind of realizes, oh my gosh, I can talk a little, like, it's not super great, and so she gets this look like she's, like, everyone's going down. For some reason, her voice is, like, her power, I guess. She's ready to fight back. And so, I guess it's later that day, and Dr. Trask is sitting there all stoned again, opening up his pills, and he's so shaky and everything, he's just, like, dumping pills everywhere. And he dumps all the pills out of his bottle and, like, puts a couple in his hand, takes them, and I'm like, this is not a good condition. I mean, I know this is gonna come to play later, but I'm like, this is not healthy. He heads into the padded room to get her in his scrubs to perform the lobotomy, and she's sitting there in her straitjacket, and she's waiting for him. And he's starting to undo the straitjacket to get her ready to take her out for the surgery. Like, as soon as he turns her around, you know, to face him, she just, now that she's free from the straitjacket, she turns around and she just grabs him by the face. And it's awesome. She grabs his face, slams him up into the padded walls, and he's fighting her back. And, you know, she's just, like, grabbing his face, throwing him all over the place. And it's a lot of stress for him, which I knew this would come into play. I was like, you know, because now he's trying to kill her, and she's so angry and stressed out about it that it starts to affect his heart, and he kind of is choking while he, you know, he starts, can't breathe, and he's choking, and he's letting go of her neck, and he's trying to get his pills out. But then just earlier he accidentally dumped all his pills out onto his desk in his office, and he can't get to them now, and he needs them right away. And he's like, oh my gosh, they're on my desk. And he's laying on the floor and he's asking her to help him. I'm like, what? No. Like, he's like, please, my pills, please tell the desk or get open the door so I can get my pills. And then he realizes, he's like, oh my gosh, you can't speak. So like, you couldn't call the front desk anyway to get my pills. And he's like, gosh, I'm gonna, you know, this is it. And so he's like, oh, you can't speak. And then she's like, oh, yes, I can. She's like, oh, I can speak now, you know. And he's like, wait, what? And then that's when he's even more like, please call the desk, my pills, my pills. And I'm like, oh yeah, like she's just gonna be like, okay, I don't want you to die.
Please, please, you can't just stand there to watch me.
I wanna watch you. You deserve to die.
Murderer!
And so he's like grabbing at her and getting mad and stuff, and he eventually dies of, I guess, like a heart attack or some sort of heart failure thing. And so she walks over to the screen and she's gone now. I mean, like, I can't say I would blame her. She's gonna need some help after this. But she like calls into the desk, which at, like I said, I'm assuming the camera is only like, you have to click on it maybe to see, I don't know. You know, she's like, I'm in room 19 or whatever. There's been a horrible accident. Dr. Trask is dead. And then she kind of like starts smiling and laughing right after that. She's like, he's dead. Yay. You know, you can tell she kind of snapped there a little bit, you know, and she's just staring into it, saying dead and laughing. She's just so gone with this situation. And then that's how the episode ends. So Dr. Trask gets what's come to him, like in most Tales from the Crypt episodes. But poor Susie is now having to deal with that situation and her husband's dead. You know, that's how it ends. It cuts to the Crypt Keeper. He's in a coffin wrapped up in a straitjacket. Crypt Keeper, you're so punny. And the best Crypt Keeper pun is...
Well, that was quite a scream, wasn't it, kids? And what a surprise for poor Dr. Trask. There's a villain with a heart. Attack, that is.
And that's pretty much the episode. That was the end of Season 2, Episode 15, Mute Witness to Murder. It's a pretty fun episode. There's no trivia from IMDb on this episode. The next episode is Season 2, Episode 16, Television Terror. Thank you for listening to the Good Evening Kitties podcast. If you'd like to rate, review, subscribe, you can find me on most podcast places. Podbean, Podbay, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all those. You can leave me a 5-star review on iTunes if you feel so inclined. That would be great. I also have a Facebook page for the Good Evening Kitties podcast. If you want to go to that and like that, it'll keep you updated on different episodes when they come out and different things about Tales from the Crypt. That's it. So thank you for listening. Bye.
I just had quite a scare. I actually thought my heart was beating again.
Hello, murder puppets.
Do you like Murder Most Foul?
Do you like gory details?
Do you love dark humor that offsets the horror?
If you do, then come and check us out, the Gory Gals of the Color Me Dead podcast.
We drop new episodes every Wednesday because on Wednesdays we wear murder.
Adopt, don't shop, and stay out of chalk lines.